now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. Hi, Julene.
Peter Werby, how are you?
We are all set to do it again to take your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
If you like
Sunday night, we're in our 43rd year. Well, you're 43rd year. I'm
yeah.
going to log on your coattails there.
That's right. If you'd like to call us, rather email us, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This is a phone-in talk show. If you've just stumbled by this, or you're listening to the great riff rock and roll, the countdown that just finished, and all that, and you're going, what the, where's the next rock and roll song? That'll be happening in 3 hours.
That's right. Right?
But in the meantime,
we'll be rocking again, don't you worry.
Well, we'll be rocking, talking about stuff. The big story tonight, the absolute blockbuster story.
What?
The 2013 Corvette.
Is that what it is? I did see something about that.
Yeah, they just unveiled it. They, you know, they had it embargoed. People I know, like our friend that shoots for Reuters. You know,
oh, sure.
Yeah. She was going down there to, you know, to shoot it and all
cool.
that.
Cool. When does the show actually open?
I have no idea.
You know, we're talking about the big auto show.
Yeah,
here in town.
It's the
international.
The international auto show.
North American International Auto Show. Right.
But wait a minute. Does that make sense? North American International.
It's big. It's one of the biggest ones. And when my dad was a car dealer, he retired now, but he would come up here every year for that. And car dealers from all over the country come here for that.
Every once in a while.
And car enthusiasts.
Every once in a while, I'll start saying things on the air, and since you folks can't see this, Jalene will start shaking her head furiously, like, no, don't go there, don't go there. And one time she
I don't do it that often.
One time she did it, and that was it for our show, our national show, right?
Because you went there.
Yeah, and her eyes were getting big. I don't even want to talk about what it was
My
about.
My eyes were like saucers.
So you might say, you know what, I think the North American International Auto Show is so boring.
You haven't been. And you know what? It's a celebration of is still going on. I mean, this is our murderous, polluting machine. Peter, this is our city, and they almost went into the tanker. I'm calling you a car hop bah humbug.
But wait a minute. In February, there's, what is it just called the auto show? What's the
Autorama. Autorama. Which is my favorite.
Yeah, that's where people take cars and reshape them.
Custom cars.
Chopped and channeled and
very cool
hot rods.
Stuff.
Yeah,
that is my favorite, but I think we need to be happy that there is a North American International Auto Show. Who would agree with me? And I love going to that.
I would rather go to a refrigerator show.
Oh, stop it.
No, I wouldn't.
Peter.
But you know what? Because a lot of people, they dream about cars. The car is there. Many of the prototypes are very interesting at the North American International Auto Show.
Yeah, and the whole green movement. You know, green.
Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The environment.
Right. That cars destroy.
Peter.
What?
We've got to work our way toward things.
Yeah, okay. And
we're cynical
but
tonight.
I was thinking about this Corvette, and I think it goes out the door at about $55,000.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I was thinking my car costs $25,000.
Yeah.
And I've got the car of my dreams.
I love my car. I have a little hybrid, and I'm happy with it.
Isn't that a song by Queen? I'm in love with my car.
I'm not really in love with material things in general.
So that's it. Because anyway, if a consumer economy had to depend on me, we would be in a permanent depression. So go out there and work and spend,
You spend more than I do, Mr. Werby.
That is true.
You're much more of a consumer than I am.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Is it because you're older than me? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I'm further along in my career.
You're more mature.
Yeah. All right. Let's not talk about this. Anyways, that was one of the things. You didn't start shaking your head. Don't talk about this because we're all supposed to be, you know, really into the auto show.
Well, I am.
Okay. Paul,
so
humbug.
I'm not worried. That's how you are.
You know, it's hard for me to get my head around this gun thing.
I know, because the gun thing keeps coming at it. And people, just like, I mean, I'm not equating guns with racism by any means, but just as racism has just gotten crazier and more public, mainly like we talk about due to the internet, same thing with the gun issue. My God, I was just talking to John, who answers our phones and
313-298-WRIF
produced the show about it before. And some of these posts on Facebook are just, you know, out of control. People are equating guns with things that have nothing to, you know, they're just lame
well,
arguments, in my opinion.
I mean, for one thing, well, here, wait a minute. I got a couple of news articles.
Who needs an AK-47? That's what it comes down in my mind.
Wait.
Who needs one?
Needs, not about need.
I want one. And I don't care.
I want one.
Who needs one?
But here's the deal. Everybody who wants one probably has one now. So the debate is over. I was just looking, the NRA, the lobbyists for the gun manufacturers who have just done so well because of all this. Can't find the one I was looking for. Anyway, the NRA spokespeople, I shouldn't say that. The NRA spokesman. Here. Gun groups, push to ban assault weapons will fail. Well, yeah, it will. It's going to fail. Gun rights group on Sunday forecast that bids to ban assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition clips will fail in Congress as Vice President Joe Biden prepares this week to give proposals to curb gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so every sport enthusiast will that wants one of these will get one for hunting or for target shooting. Every nut that wants one either has one or will get one
or
soon.
Or will get more.
Yeah, every target shooter that wants one will get it. Every KKK member who wants one will get it. And I am not equating these folks, by the way, at all. Hunters and target shooters.
You're not
connecting
them.
But I'm saying, because here, I mean, every good guy, this was the Wayne LaPierre from the NRA.
His name's way too dignified.
but he said, what we need are good guys with guns when bad guys with guns come along into school. So I'm not as disparaging it, but every good guy who thinks that he will be a better guy or a guy that will provide security will have an assault rifle, and every bad guy that wants one will also have one. So we'll have
what we is the title of that book. An armed madhouse.
An armed madhouse.
More of an armed madhouse than ever.
And for the people that would like to get rid of guns, the people that would like to ban guns, the toothpaste is out of the tube.
They're already.
And it ain't going back. And these gun shows are swamped.
Oh, I
know.
Swamped
with people buying them.
It's like a Beatles concert. You know, it's like Led Zeppelin got back together.
So, all the crooks got all the guns they want, the gang members, because generally when you hear this debate about gun possession and the types of guns and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
The Bushmasters, people think, well, you know, people have the right under the Second Amendment, or we want it for home security, or whatever. And really what is left out of the equation are the thousands of people that get killed in gang fights, essentially. Mm-hmm. The urban criminals that kill people. So they have all the guns they want as well. So, but one thing that is indisputable, well, you know what? I was going to say it's indisputable, but I noticed even on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/nightcall, please like us, get involved there. Let's see. I don't know if I put it up there or not, but I was thinking did I do it? No, I didn't. Damn. But, here it is. And here's what, so many people are commenting here about they were saying
the gun issue is it's the hot button issue that has lasted longer than a few days.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Ever since the Connecticut.
Here, this is
shooting.
Stu, and I guess I can say his last name since he wrote it on the Facebook page. Stu Chisholm says it is not necessarily a lie. We're talking about the Hitler gun control lie, because that's one of the things they said. The first thing that Hitler did was to ban guns.
Yeah, he was also a vegetarian.
But that wasn't the first thing he did by a long shot. I mean, first thing he did, as a matter of fact, was to close a newspaper called the Munich Post that told the truth all the time about the Nazi Party. party.
Well, they were out.
Yeah. But here's what Stu says. It's not necessarily a lie. Actually, it's completely a lie. But something we're told over and over again that seldom gets questioned. For instance, there's another lie that a gun in your home is 47% more likely to kill you or a family member than an intruder. Which is absolutely the truth. But you can say it's not, and there are some refutations of all that. But I guess just if you think about what makes sense, how many home invasions are there by armed people that are fended off by someone using a gun, mm-hmm. as compared to somebody that, you know, gets pissed off and shoots a family member, or there's an accident,
right.
or there's
the
a suicide.
Remember the one who would think it was the East Coast? The guy shot his own kid.
Yeah, well, that happens. And but
out in the yard.
I don't want to get just anecdotal because what the statistics are. For instance, here, where did I see this? The American Academy of Pediatrics. Now, these aren't folks that are involved in the gun debate to any extent. They're concerned about the health and welfare of our children.
Yes.
And they say the safest home for a child or adolescent is one without firearms.
Makes sense to me.
I mean, doesn't it make sense on the face of it? You can make all the arguments in the world for why you want to have one, but you cannot say that a home with no gun is well, the other way around.
Less safe.
Yeah, is less safe. Or is households with adolescents, 13 to 17, firearms were left unlocked 41% of the time. So that, you know, people like Adam, I always forget his name, Alonza.
Yeah.
And, you know, but here, on the opposite side of that, you know, checking people out for their mental stability and all that, they were his mom's guns.
That's right.
Yeah. He didn't have to go and eat through any background check or
they were right there
anything
in
like
his
that.
House.
But, so, gun owners and gun advocates, there is no reason to fear because there probably will be no legislation whatsoever.
Except in New York State.
New York has a good chance of doing things like banning assault rifles and what
have you. Yeah, I was personally just as... I'm not anti-gun. We've said this a million times. Peter has a gun in his house. I don't.
I don't even know what to say.
I have a big scary dog.
You know
I
what?
Always say that.
You know,
even though they could shoot my scary dog.
You made a common formulation, so I'm not being critical. But being pro-gun or anti-gun, I mean, it even has an odd aspect
to it. Yeah, it is even put that.
I mean, are you pro-car or anti-car?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, cars.
I'm pro-transportation, preferably public, but that's not happening right now here in Detroit.
John, who's taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF, got these stats for 2011. People killed by automobiles, 32,367. People killed, murdered by handguns, 8,583. So there was almost four times as many deaths from cars.
But it's a whole different thing.
Well, people, they say that's...
I think that's
ones are accidents, the others are... he was looking up gun accidents as well, which they're... Pardon me. He does. The NHTS, the National Highway Safety Administration, reports that in 2011, auto deaths were as follows. 32,367 and about 10,000 of them, that's interesting, were alcohol related.
Mm-hmm.
But I was interested in also, in injuries, probably hundreds of thousands of injuries.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. So no one talks about banning cars. And actually, if you wanted safety, you would do well to ban cars. I mean, the American Pediatric Association ought to say, ban cars.
Or don't take your babies in
cars. Don't take your babies, even if you got a sign that says, a baby on board. Right.
Gosh, remember when those were popular? But the back to the New York State thing, if you don't mind, Peter.
Go ahead.
This is from the New York Times. It's nearing agreement on a proposal to put what would be some of the nation's strictest gun control laws into effect, including what Governor Cuomo vowed on Wednesday would be an ironclad ban on assault weapons and large capacity magazines and new measures to keep guns out of the hands of criminals and mentally ill people. The fact that they're even talking about it makes me happy.
Well, they're not going to confiscate them. That would mean that
right,
as
not,
of some day.
They're not going to go to
so
your house.
So that's what I was saying earlier. Everybody who has one
You're
has
cool.
one.
They're so, not going to take, you know. Yeah.
So more guns mean more deaths by definition. Because, for instance, if nobody had any guns, there would be no deaths from guns, right?
True.
So just as more guns proliferate and they have the capacity for more firepower, more rapid firing and all that, you're going to find more people getting killed. And so, but should we be having this incredible discussion over 8,500 deaths from murders? But of course, we're not talking about suicides, accidents, and what have you. I mean, there are lots of things. A lot of guys, they're sort of this totem of masculinity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all cars.
Yeah, right, true. Yeah.
So, if for the paranoid among us, they're this weapon of security because when the government becomes tyrannical, like taking your gun away because you have a gun, won't be coming to your house, right?
Right.
So it won't be tyrannical to you. Or what else they're going to do? They're going to put in a weak health program. There's more evidence, right? But on the other hand, they're fun for shooters, for hunters, and or probably the majority of people, right?
I don't find them fun.
Well, okay. But no one's asking. You don't think hot rods are fun either, do you?
Well,
I mean, driving them.
Not necessarily, no.
I got a trophy at home for when I won at a drag strip when I was a kid.
I got to see this.
All right. Man, but what's going to happen this? Police shoot armed suspect in San Diego theater.
Yeah.
They said the gunman never made any threats to others in the theater, but he had left a suicide note, so this guy was going to confront his girlfriend. This one is really weird. Keith Ratliff loved guns. He built his own rifles, kept bullets in his car's cup holder. Sure. And on the rear window, he slapped a sticker of the Starbucks coffee mermaid firing two pistols, and it read, "I love guns and coffee." And Mr. Ratliff's passion for firearms made him something of a celebrity on the Internet, where he helped make scores of videos about high-powered and exotic guns and explosives. On YouTube, his site was the ninth largest on YouTube.
I mean, that's...
3.5 million subscribers,
channels.
More than half a billion views.
God.
But last week, the authorities said Mr. Ratliff, 32, ended up on the wrong end of a gun. The police in northeast Georgia found him dead at his office on January 3rd, shot once in the head. He was surrounded by several guns, but not the one that killed him.
This is mind-blowing.
Yeah, so we're going to see more of that.
The guy was a celebrity on the Internet. Because of he's a gun enthusiast, and he gets shot through the head.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
And here's what's going to happen, too. With more and more people with guns, that means there's going to be more accidents, more people using them in anger, and there'll probably also be somebody that stops a shooting at a school, and there'll be somebody, grandma will stop a prowler, and what have you. But the overall, what's the big word I'm looking for here? A preponderance of weapons in our society make just skews everything in this extraordinarily odd way. I don't get
violent
it.
Violent way.
Well, one of the things, but here, I just wish, and here on my website, which I, I've got two.
You know what, Peter, in this article about that gun enthusiast, I couldn't believe my eyes when I read this story. He starred in a video with one of his buddies, Kyle Myers. He had targets in the backyard, and he was firing at hay bales or photographs of Justin Bieber.
Well, I'll go for that.
Come on! Don't you ever
no, I'm only
say
kidding.
That.
I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding.
We don't promote any kind of thing like that on our show. Leave the Biebs alone. Sorry, Riff Rockers. He's just a kid from Canada. Leave him alone.
What? He is from Canada?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not even American.
Oh, God.
No wonder these guys are in this case. But remember what we say when we've talked about race. If you can't think straight about race, you probably can't think it straight about anything else.
That's so true.
And there is some aspect.
That's a tough one for people to grasp.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah, because it makes you nuts. And this whole gun thing makes people nuts as well.
Seriously, it's as nutty as the racism that's going on here. And I'm not equating the two. I'm just saying people can't
help
themselves.
If you want to hear, see, I read all this NRA stuff. I read The Rifleman, the magazine of the NRA and what have you. By the way, the NRA was very, very strong during the 1930s in passing the first National Firearms Act that required registration, by dealers to outlaw automatic weapons because you had all these.
So what happened?
Pretty Boy Floyd and what?
Right.
Shooting
right.
at. Yeah. But anyway.
Shooting up half the county.
On my website, you can also go to our Night Call Facebook page, but on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, There's a big article how the NRA's true believers converted a marksmanship group, because that's what they were all about, into a mighty gun lobby. And what they really have become is this gun lobby for the big manufacturers. And they've sowed so much paranoia, so much fear, that the gun sales have just skyrocketed. And that's what they're all about. I mean, they're financed by Colt and Remington and Bushmaster and the rest of
that's
them.
I think that's the biggie right now, right?
The two other things I would ask you to read at peterwerby.com is the Hitler gun control lie. And I wrote under it, can't gun nuts and right-wingers get anything right? Which they can't. That's what they're incapable. They're incapable of critical thinking. The other, well, and then there's the Yamamoto. I don't have that on there. No, I don't. There is this General Yamamoto, and all over the Internet, it says that Admiral Isoroku Yamamoto, they quote him as saying before World War II that Japan was deterred from invading the U.S. mainland by fear of American citizens with guns in their closets. And they quote Admiral Yamamoto as saying, you cannot invade mainland United States. There would be a rifle behind every blade of grass. Mm. Well, factcheck.org, which says it has no position on gun control whatsoever, but does not want BS circulating, says the quote is unsubstantiated and certainly contrived, even though it has been repeated thousands of times in various internet postings. There is no record of the commander-in-chief of Japan's wartime fleet, who was responsible for Pearl Harbor in 1941, ever saying it. So why is it repeated thousands and thousands of times in internet? And this is what I'm talking about.
It's called the internet.
Yeah, it has to do what that responsibility it places upon you before you accept it, and certainly before you send it along, is to think critically. Now how would I know upon seeing this? In fact, I heard it first on the Tom Hartman show.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not refute it. And I said, you know what? This sounds like just BS.
Something to look up
on. It sounds like BS. Actually, it wasn't on. That's another place to go. Snopes.com. You say, oh, this is so great. This supports my position. But think about whether or not the chief of staff of an enemy force would say, oh, we're afraid to invade that country. They wouldn't say it.
Right.
Right? So they didn't say it. So people are going around saying, yeah, right.
They would never do that.
Right. The Hitler gun lie this is on my site as well, and it's very long. But here's what happened. So Hitler takes power, dictatorial power in 1933. They said the first thing that Hitler did, well, it was 5 years later that they actually passed this law. But get the law. There was, after World War I, the government was called the Weimar Republic, or the Weimar, begins with a W. And, because that was the capital in Weimar, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
The German government that immediately preceded Hitler's actually had tougher gun laws than the Nazi regime. After its defeat in World War I and agreeing to the harsh surrender terms laid out by the Allies at the Treaty of Versailles that ended the war, the German legislature in 1919 passed the law effectively banning all private firearm possessions, leading the government to confiscate guns already in circulation. This is not Hitler. This is, in fact, I think it was this would feed people's thing, a socialist government most of the time. In 1928, the Reichstag, which was the parliament building, relaxed the regulation a bit but put in place a strict registration regime that required citizens to acquire separate permits to own guns, to sell them, or to carry them. Separate permits for each one of those things.
Wow.
This is not Hitler. Hitler is just this sort of minority party. I mean, Hitler never got more than a third of the popular vote. The left, the socialists, the communists, in the last free election got over 50%. The 1938 law signed by Hitler that Wayne LaPierre mentions in his book that's mentioned above basically does the opposite of what he says it did. The 1938 revisions completely deregulated acquisition and transfer of rifles and shotguns as well as ammunition, according to this college professor. Meanwhile, many more categories of people, including Nazi party members, were exempted from gun ownership regulations altogether, while the legal age of purchase was lowered from 20 to 18, and permit lengths were extended from 1 year to 3 years. So in other words, the opposite happened. The Nazis loosened gun regulations. Mm-hmm. So, and you're going, whoa, wait a minute. That's, I thought it was Hitler that did it. One more thing. And this is debated, but I wonder if you've ever heard this. And this makes plenty of sense to me, because it's all about those goddamn slave states.
I know.
I can't believe
this. It's amazing.
This.
I mean, they're just so consistent with their hate.
The Second Amendment, which, gee, I should have put it up in front of me. I'll get it in a second. We'll get you guys on the air in a second. 313-298-WRI if you'd like to comment. If it was about individual rights for the individual to have a gun in their home in order to protect themselves from internally from a government gone tyrannical, why is the language in there about the militia? Well, this got written, the Second Amendment, before it actually hit the, you know, the Constitution was written by James Madison, right? Someone tell me, James Mason, James Madison, one or the other. I think it was James Madison. Wrote it over and over and over again. And each time it was unacceptable to the southern states because the southern states wanted militias to not suppress tyrannical governments, but to suppress slave revolts.
Yeah.
That was their great fear.
Their big fear.
Yeah. And if you say, well, no, it was about individual rights. Every time James Madison, check me out, make sure that I'm right, wrote it, there was a religious exemption from serving in the militia. You wouldn't have a religious exemption from your own self.
So, meaning if you were a Christian, you didn't have to serve?
Well, like a Quaker or something like that. So it was about militia. It wasn't about it. It was about raising the states, raising armed forces in order to repel foreign invasion. But that's not what the slave states wanted. You remember, we were saying that the other week, that the only reason that the southern slave states joined the rebellion because they were fearful, and correctly fearful, that Britain was going to abolish slavery. Their whole economy was based on slavery. Their whole culture was
free
based
labor.
On slavery. Yeah, exactly. That at the time of the Civil War, 4 million people were property. That they sullied the basic document of this nation by putting in there that human beings were recognized as property and counted as 3/5 of a human being only to gain them more power. And the states in the North were essentially blackmailed into doing that. So the whole 18, this is, I went through this the other day, the whole 1840s and 50s, they're just burning up the country with questions of slavery. And then the Civil War, 600,000 Americans die. So these son of a bitches could continue to hold slaves.
That's right.
And that rotten flag, that awful flag of the greatest traitors in American history, the Confederate flag, that is still flown today, is just beyond me. How anybody that considers themselves a loyal American or a patriot can have that. That was the traitorous flag that began the Civil War, that carnage. I have an email about that somewhere where apparently it is okay. Let me see if I have that up here. Matt from Detroit said, heard your show last week, pardon me, can understand your frustration over the Confederate flag being outright displayed. If something offends you, did you know it is legal to publicly burn it? I always thought that the KKK were trying to offend Christians by burning the cross because of Jesus' teaching, love thy neighbor. The pastor who was going to burn the Quran was within his constitutional right. The Supreme Court ruled that the Stars and Stripes, our nation's flag, can be burned as a symbol of expression. Did they? I don't really think it would make a big impact if you burned the Confederate flag in Michigan, maybe in Alabama.
I don't know. I've seen my fair share of them.
Well, you did
Michigan.
Down at the 7-Eleven.
Yes, but I've seen them more than.
And as we were saying, anybody that says the Pledge of Allegiance, which the last one nation, indivisible, that's why these Johnny Rebs, these slavers, these people that fought this war solely to maintain slavery. There was no other reason. That was it. Slavery. And there was not, and when they attacked the United States garrison at Fort Sumter, there was nobody. Nobody was saying, we're going to abolish slavery. They moved aggressively, militarily, stealing federal property that people in Michigan had paid for. But here, the Second Amendment. This is the only thing wrong with this is this guy's name. You would think, you know, hey, I better look this up on Snopes, which I did, because it's the Rogers Williams University of Law professor Carl T. Bogus.
Poor guy.
But he says, in his recent University of California Davis Law Review article, The Hidden History of the Second Amendment, that the professor offers a thesis that could forever change the way Americans view the Second Amendment. It was James Madison. James Madison wrote the Second Amendment to assure the Southern states that Congress would not undermine the slave system by disarming the militia, which were then the principal instruments of slave control throughout the South. And these Southern slave militias would go through the plantations and search, for instance, slave quarters. And if they found anyone with an offensive weapon, including like a club or something like that, they would, the man usually would get a whipping and often then be sold and separated from his family also. So the slavers have put the mark on this country since its origin. And the idea of freedom, of liberty, of equality, of everything that these revolutions of the 17th and 18th and 19th century stood for is sullied by so much of this. Okay.
Peter.
That's my speech.
You've been reading that book.
Yeah, I have. Oh, yeah, I've been reading, I always forget his first name, James. James McPherson's The Battle Cry of Freedom. After the battle at Shiloh, I just can't even imagine that the war continued. Or that anybody fought another war after this.
Here we are today.
The slaughter that occurred, the madness of that, all to maintain slavery.
And back then it was about that. Now it's about big business.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're going to take a break.
And we're going to take your phone calls when we come back.
Yeah, we're going to take your phone.
298-9743.
Big protest in Paris, too.
Wow.
Wait till you hear this one.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. The weekend is brought to you by Turtle Creek Casino and Hotel, presenting the Amsoil Championship Snowcross US 27 Motorsports National February 8th and 9th in Traverse City. Visit TurtleCreekCasino.com for more info. The riff.
Outdoor work stops for no one, including Old Man Winter. Good thing a John Deere is reliable all year long. Hurry into a participating John Deere dealer by February 28th and save $800 on a 2012 Gator XUV 825i and $500 on an X300 Select Series tractor. Some conditions apply.
Come out and visit Tri-County Equipment. To find the location closest to you, visit us online at tricountyequipment.net or myjohndeeredealer.com for more details.
Get in the zone!
Your car is a big investment, and putting off oil changes can be a big mistake. Do it on time to help protect your engine and extend its life. Come into AutoZone today and get a 5-plus quart jug of Pennzoil conventional motor oil and a Fram Extra Guard oil filter for only $21.99. See store for restrictions and details. Look out for your investment and your dollars with oil change tips from AutoZone. Parts are just part of what we do.
Get in the zone.
AutoZone.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much and welcome back. Usually when we talk about guns, it is gun owners and people who think there ought to be little or no restrictions on them that call in to defend guns. But I'm curious what those of you who oppose gun possession or... What I said is that it's all over and the guns and the gun owners have won. That everybody who wants one has one.
Maybe they know it. That's why they're not chiming in. What,
but anyway, it's 313-298-WRIF. I want to tell you about this march. But this is for Jalene. Dave writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and says, Jalene, get off the soda pop.
What does that mean?
It means because you talk about drinking pop soda on the air.
Did I talk about that tonight?
No, not tonight. But he just sent this in.
Really?
Actually, this was sent in Saturday at 7:40.
He listened to the podcast.
Yeah,
probably.
Dave says, I've heard health officials say soda pop is just as bad for your health as cigarettes.
I'm having a Hawaiian fruit punch right now. You want to know how many grams of sugar in it?
No.
Peter?
Yes. How much fruit punch is in it?
It's 10%. Got 41 grams of sugar.
I don't know whether that's a lot or a little.
It's a lot.
41.
I don't think I can finish this. Dave, thank you.
I do
drink a lot of water as well.
The article that it's linked to, millions of Americans are hopelessly addicted to soda pop beverages, whether they be the sugary varieties loaded with high fructose corn syrup or the chemical varieties loaded with aspartame and sucralose, it says. Both are harmful, of course, and can lead to a future filled with chronic pain and disease.
Oh.
I hate when that happens.
God.
All right.
I know.
Hey, it's Anarchy Night on Night Call when at 1 a.m. And if it's too
it
late for you.
It is every
I guess
night,
so.
Night Call.
If you can't stay up late, you can listen to this as a podcast. John, who's going to take your calls at 313-298-WRIF, prepares a podcast, and it'll be published on WRIF.com or on my website, peterwerby.com, at noon tomorrow. And so it's Anarchy Night because we have...
Your guests.
Although, I can't, I'm having such trouble tonight with this. I don't know. Anyway, I'll have to do it by memory then. Two books on anarchy, although, interestingly, one is called Three Cheers for Anarchy, or Anarchism, Three Cheers for Anarchism by James C. Scott. And, you know, usually say, three cheers for, but he's saying two cheers. And
Two Cheers for Anarchism on Autonomy, Dignity, and Meaningful Work and Play. He reconfigures the radical philosophy into a way to live peacefully and productively within state society.
And then the other one is really a trip, though. It's called A Rule is to Break, A Child's Guide to Anarchy.
And this is good. I like this. The emphasis has to be on discovery, spontaneity, and joy rather than strict adherence to discipline. And I know people, our friend David Rovigs, as a matter of fact, he's raising his daughter Layla just like that. And this is the most amazing child ever. She's so lucky to be raised like that.
And this is a children's book, though. Although the adults can read it, you know, just little words on it.
But I'm sure she has that book.
So no one ever heard of this book at all, right? But A Rule is to Break, A Child's Guide to Anarchy. And then suddenly the Tea Party got a hold of it. It probably would have sold 400 copies.
Oh, so how much have they sold?
I don't know how many they've sold, but I've got an article from a London newspaper about it. So it's gone viral. And so part of it was just the subtitle, A Child's Guide to Anarchy. But then it says, a write-up from the Tea Party publication, a Tea Party publication, condemned the book as downright shocking. It also took issue with the support the book has received from renowned U.S. Educator Bill Ayers, who provided a blurb for the title in which he calls it a delight to read and then goes on to talk about it. But however... They say, well, wait a minute here, let me see.
And if you're on hold, Peter's going to get to your call.
Yeah.
He is.
Bill Ayers is described tongue-in-cheek beneath his blurb in the book as an, quote, author, teacher, Barack Obama's alleged terrorist pal, and and grandpa. Now, you may remember
and
this.
And friend of Peter Werby.
Yes. Bill was, my old pal Bill, who I palled around with, was accused of palling around with Barack Obama, and he was part of this group in the late 1960s and early 1970s called Weatherman. Mm-hmm. And, I think, did he serve any time in jail? I don't know. But he got a PhD, and now he's a respected educator. But, you know.
He
didn't kill anyone, no. In fact, his girlfriend got killed.
In that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. But so the Tea Party says, the book alone is horrendous enough, and the book is so mild. But it gets even worse.
It says Peter Werby.
When we realize Bill Ayers, radical terrorist leftist and friend of Obama, not only endorsed it through his Twitter account, his comments in the support of the book are listed on the actual Amazon.com book page.
Yeah.
Wow. If a person can be read by the company he keeps, what does this say about Obama? I don't know. You know, at one point they were saying that Bill Ayers had written Obama's books, too.
Oh, please. Part of the craziness involved, anything around Obama, anyone who does not care for him.
Yeah, right.
Sure make up a whole bunch of stuff.
Let's get some people on the air. Yeah, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air. Whoop, I didn't put you on the air. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. Who's this? Oh, this is Rick from Belleville. Go ahead, Rick, you're on the air.
Yeah, this message is for Peter Werby. Peter Werby, I'd like to know where you're getting your information. I've been a long-time RIF listener.
Yeah.
I am absolutely disgusted when I'm here tonight.
What'd you hear? What did you hear that didn't sound?
All your anti-gun raves.
Wait, when did I make an anti-gun rave?
I've been listening since I got off of work. And,
well, give me the. I don't. You know, I mean, I said a lot of things, and so I'm wondering what you found objectionable.
You're not going to take your guns.
Why? What? No. Wait. What did you find objectionable that I said?
Well, you're sitting there saying the whole thing about Admiral Yamamoto was false.
Yeah, that's false.
You're down in the NRA. No, it's not. The NRA as a some kind of a powerhouse.
Well, they are.
Wait. What makes you think that this? Here, let me just get back to this. There is this canard, this fake attribution of this statement by this Admiral Yamamoto that said that they wouldn't invade the U.S. because
they're armed to the teeth.
Because there'd be a rifle behind every blade of grass. What makes you think that the people that say that's not true are incorrect? What makes you think it's correct?
Everybody knows it's correct for God.
You know, it says on here where, you know, that you wanted to know where I'm getting your information from. Where are you getting your information from that this is correct? It's incorrect. These people, that this is what they do for a living. They fact check. And this is not true. The man never said it. Why would a guy that sees, you know, an enemy nation, the United States, why would he say he's afraid to invade us? Even if he felt
and aren't
true.
We kind of getting along with Japan these days?
These days I guess we are. But that's the reason why the civilian marksmanship program was started, to give civilians the chance to buy surplus rifles and to train them to use them in a case of invasion.
When was this?
Back in World War II.
Okay, so who's going to invade us?
Let's stick on one thing though. In the 1930s, essentially the NRA was a sportsman's and hunter's organization. They supported all sorts of restrictions on gun ownership and the types of gun, and they supported the National Registration Act in the 1930s and all that. But I am telling you that Admiral Yamamoto never said this. According to factcheck.org, there is nothing other than it's constant being repeated. And you're telling me that's an anti-gun rave?
What I've been hearing tonight, yeah, you're extremely against guns.
Wait, well, all right. First off, you told me that I'm anti-gun because I said that a quote ascribed to somebody never was spoken by the man. And, you know, you haven't come up with anything. It's kind of unfair. I mean, I looked it all up. You've done nothing. So here, we never let people call back. Why don't you do this, Rick? Why don't you, do you have a computer?
I want to challenge you to go on air with Ted Nugent and let him set you straight. Because I tell you what, from listening to
please.
Wait. You know what?
Kidding me?
Listen, you don't need a spokesman. I'm just an ordinary guy. I started off in radio as a riff, DJ, just a rock and roll DJ.
43 years ago.
You know, Ted Nugent wouldn't let anybody get a word in edgewise. Here, and I asked you, do you have a computer? Do you have a computer?
The truth, you're making us sound like a bunch of savages.
No, I don't get it. I say that there's no quote from an admiral. I say that the NRA's citing of Hitler's gun laws is totally opposite.
And that the NRA's turned into basically a big lobbying group for big gun companies.
Yeah.
What's not true about that?
One more thing. Do you have a computer? Do you have a computer? Do you have a computer?
Listen to me.
Do you have a computer? You listen to me. Do you have a computer?
I know. I'm about tired of listening to liberal trash.
Okay. Well, then good.
Liberal trash.
Liberal trash.
Okay. That explains him.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
So this is where this all sort of begins to coalesce around the right wing. And the NRA, of course.
Well,
now,
he's a believer.
Has become situated on the far right, where they spend millions of dollars to support these right wing candidates, all of which, just got, blown away. Wow, listen to this. So we said there was 8,000-something murders in the United States with handguns, 851 accidental gun deaths in 2011, 11,832 gun suicides in 2010.
Mm.
So that adds up to about a little over 20,000. All right. But where's the anti-gun rave?
I'm not sure
rave?
How I feel about that whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was not an anti-gun rave. It was a gun conversation.
Yeah.
About a variety of things, and if you think that...
So I want to know what was true. So I said that there's this quote that's ascribed to Admiral Yamamoto, which led the assault on Pearl Harbor, that's spurious, that's fake, that's a lie, that the whole thing about Hitler, his first thing he did when he was in office was to confiscate guns, where he didn't even pass a gun law till 5 years later. And what he did was to liberalize gun laws, to let them, have more people have more guns.
And you can't argue with facts, Peter. And
yeah.
I can't remember this latest caller, his name, who just called in,
Rick.
Rick. Okay, Rick. You know, Rick, he was even willing to let you call back. And that is one of the rules of this show, that you can't call twice in one show. He was giving you a chance to look it up. I'm just going to let you know, online, find us
the quote.
Find us the quote and proof that that is from a valid source, and
that
maybe we'll talk. But it's not, because you're not going to, because it's not.
Yeah, I really looked. I really look.
And Peter is a researchy type, believe me. He doesn't talk out of his, you know.
313-298-WRF. Here's Nick and Fraser. Hey, Nick, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter and Julie.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, I was just calling because you said basically, it's too late to outlaw guns. It's understandable, but I think you have to start somewhere, and you could easily shut down manufacturers. You'd have to have the political will to do it.
Oh, but now you're talking. Now you're going to get old Rick all crazy.
I know. I'm going to get all the gun nuts crazy. I've actually been picking them off one by one on Facebook, having a field day with them.
Are you and I friends on Facebook?
I like your guys' show, but I don't think me and you are friends.
Oh, okay.
I'll send you a friend after this call.
Please do.
Hey, go to Night Call also.
People like you.
Yeah. Go to
He said he liked our page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, good.
So, like, for example, what they're doing or attempting to do in New York State, right?
Yeah. So, the fact that they would, as there was a 10-year a ban on assault rifle sales in the United States, it's fine. I mean, is there any reason, for instance, that the NRA supports silencers, that supports body armor? I mean, all this is can only be used either for military purposes, which we don't want civilians doing, or for criminal purposes. So, yeah, I don't know why we couldn't do that. More background checks.
Think he was done yet, though.
Oh, go ahead.
Continue.
Yeah, I was just saying, you can ban the manufacture and sale of guns, and sure, if people want to continue to keep the guns, great, but they can't bring it out of their homes, and then eventually, when those people die, you can confiscate those guns, and eventually, guns will slowly fade away from society. That might not have an immediate impact, but 100 years, 50, 100 years from now, you're going to save.
Well, here's where this is not going to go down, and the NRA is absolutely correct. I doubt that any national legislation will pass at all, because for one thing, it's got to get through the House of Representatives, which is completely controlled by the Republicans, and certainly there'll be a number of Democrats fearful that the NRA will take their millions of dollars that they get from the gun manufacturers and use it to defeat them in election.
Yep.
So there's not going to be any legislation. Maybe in some of the states where there's a concern, but as like I said at the beginning, everybody, I'm sure, almost or everybody or almost everybody who wants an assault rifle has one. Everyone who wants an expanded magazine capacity has one. And on. Anyone who wants body armor
there's a surplus, and it's easy to get.
Armor-piercing ammunition, all of this stuff.
If you want your backpack for your kids with the body armor backpack, buy it up.
All right, Nick, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I saw something.
Hold on one sec.
On television. You don't watch a lot of television, but I did see something about this peace organization in the town where the...
Newtown?
We're in Newtown where that happened. And they're really trying to, make peace of it and try to get some gun legislation going in their own town.
Yeah, I don't know.
And wouldn't you? I would. I'll tell you what.
But, it's like the kind of closing the barn door after the horse is gone.
But still, it's
right.
Like, why just leave things as they are?
Let's get Chuck from Auburn Hills on the air. He says, I'm a hypocrite. I always love calls. Go ahead, Chuck. You're on the air. Why am I a hypocrite?
No, I didn't say you was a hypocrite. They must have got their wires mixed up. But everybody has their moments, though, right, Julian? Just kidding.
Yeah.
What?
Is this Chuck from Auburn Hills?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
That guy just called. He was talking about that you were against guns and everything. But I just couldn't really understand how he could be telling you you're against guns when you own one.
I don't own a gun.
No, me. Me.
Yeah.
Oh, Peter.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Peter, okay. Peter owns a gun, so he's not against guns. Me, myself, I've never owned a gun. And the only problem I got with that story is that this guy shows up with his gun trying to shoot me. I'm sitting here with no gun. You know, so that could be a problem. So,
well, it does, Chuck, but, you know, the statistics are that people with guns in their home have more of a chance, and particularly women and children are particularly at risk for a reason I'm not sure of. Women and children are safer in houses overall because if there's no gun in the house. But, like, you can find any kind of anecdotal evidence, and when you read gun magazines or what have you, they always have these particular incidents where people were able to save their family, granny shot the prowler.
Well, it's going to happen, and it's not like 100% of the time that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but rarely, I mean, the odds are that usually that people aren't going to break into our house. It happens all the time, but I don't know. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And too bad guys like that can't just say what they want to say to me. That's such a guy.
No. He was talking to me.
Yeah, he said, right, Julene?
I'm not even sure what
I know what
he meant.
I'm used to it because I'm a girl.
Okay.
Not from you, Peter.
Yeah, I don't know what you're saying. But anyway.
I'll tell you later.
Oh, wait. Wait a minute. Here's Joni. She says the same thing. Joni, hi, you're on the air. You're from Rockford, Illinois. Thanks for listening. Go ahead. You're on the air. Oh.
Hi, yeah, I just had a quick question on a comment that you had made us a couple of calls ago in regards to guns and suicides. You listed some statistics for suicides.
Yeah, it was like 11,000 in 2011.
10, yeah.
Gun deaths.
Okay, and also for, I think, murders as well. As I think
yeah, that was like 8,000.
And I was wondering what if you know the statistic that would be involved with drugs and guns involved in these, meaning how many people that committed suicide were also on drugs and how many maybe murders were connected with drugs.
You know, I don't.
Mm. That might be something John, our producer, had directed us to some sites that we could look into.
Well, the reason why I'm asking that is because, you know, you're probably not going to like this comment, but, you know, a lot of the two states that have passed the marijuana, as far as drugs go, I would say that would be more probably your way of thinking as far as being liberal or conservative and things like that. So I just wanted to know what your opinion on that is.
Well, I would
say, I'm telling you, if it's a drug that's involved in this, it ain't the weed.
Yeah, we don't.
They're probably someone who's strung out on coke or meth or heroin or something like that.
And probably
I wouldn't put it on weed.
Probably smoking reef and having a gun isn't a good idea either.
No.
That's a bad one. You know, we never got to that big protest in Paris.
That's
we'll get back to
it. We're on a roll.
Joni, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it. From Rockford, Illinois.
Huh.
Here's Tom and Flint. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, you made the comment about suppressors and body armor.
Yeah, well, and also flash suppressors. That's what I thought you were going to talk about. But, yeah, go ahead.
Flash suppressors or sound suppressors?
Well, both.
We were talking about silencers. Yeah. Silencers.
Yeah. Silencers, yeah. Well, there's no such thing as a real silencer. But
Tom?
For burying the decibel.
Wait a minute, Tom. You're
cutting out.
You're cutting. Hey, Tom, do this for me, will you? We got to take a break, anyways. Somewhere.
Hang on. Maybe you'll be in a better place when we come out of this commercial.
Yeah. If you're on a cell phone, move a little because you keep cutting in and out.
And if you have opinion, and I'm talking to the listener out there, 313-298-9743.
Okay. Now I keep promising things and don't get to it.
Well, the people of France and a lot of other countries came together in Paris today for a huge anti-gay marriage.
Maybe
protest.
One of the biggest ones the world's ever seen.
I couldn't believe my eyes.
Also, I want to get into this thing which relates to gun deaths and what have you, how this affects our health standing in the world, and we're not number one.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Hello, I'm Hank Mendez.
And I'm Janine Grillo from Weikert Realtors Excel, where we're experts in short sales, traditional sales, foreclosures, and HUD properties.
Over the years, realtors have come and gone, but we've continued to increase our market share and gain loyal customers. Janine and I personally sold over 750 homes in your area last year, and we've been selling real estate in Oakland and Macomb counties for the past 20 years.
What this means is that we have more highly qualified buyers looking to buy your home today than any other team around. Not only does this allow us to sell your house faster than anyone else, but also get you more money.
We'll create a comprehensive marketing plan for your home designed to target the correct buyers. But chances are, we already have a buyer looking for a home in your neighborhood.
So if you're looking to buy or sell, short sale or traditional sale, now is the time to call Hank or myself at 855-20-SOLD-NOW. That's 855-20-SOLD-NOW.
Or check us out online at 20soldnow.com and see why Weikert keeps growing while others are going, gone.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome back, Red Wings, from 101 WRIF. The Riff. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
Thank you very much and welcome back. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/nightcall. Like us, get involved in the discussions that are going on there. A lot of what I say, someone was saying, you know, where do you get your information from? And it's often from articles that I post there. Or I'm sorry, that Jolene posts there. Or Debbie posts there. I don't post them there. You know,
you will not take credit for that, Mr. Werby.
I made a promise that we're going to talk about the anti-gay marriage protest in Paris. And also we'd talk about how gun deaths affect our standings in world health. But I wanted to do one more thing about, you know, one of these things, remember when we were talking about secession, where these people that when Obama got reelected, and they were going, wah, 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 you know. And we were saying, hey, you know, don't let the door hit you in the ass, you know, when you're, you know, wanted to secede. But there's a lot of good people in all those southern states.
Too bad that all those other people make it.
So we were talking about we could have a population transfer. Get all these people, you know, that are saying liberal trash, get them, go down to the slave states, and all the people that want to live free, come on up here. I thought we could keep, though, like, what was it? New Orleans and Austin and
Texas.
Miami we'll take as free city
Miami
states.
Miami for sure, yeah.
Yeah, free city states. Yeah. City, yeah, yeah. But there's a lot of ways you kind of get rid of it. I like this. This was on this right-wing site. See, I look at all this stuff. You know, you right-wingers, you never read anything from the left because, I mean, you're in a polemic against reality.
Some do.
So you need all this right-wing nonsense to, it was a quote by him, and I'm going, you know, I don't know, you didn't hear it. There was this quote that these right-wing gun nuts make up and pass around. And I said, it never was said, you know, so this guy was saying I was making an anti-gun rave. But anyway, so I'm reading this right-wing site.
It's like, you want to hear a rave? That wasn't a rave.
No.
Nor are you anti-gun.
Well, again, I don't want to get anti. I'm not anti-gun. I'm not pro-gun.
The way people are thinking.
But here, I thought this was so good.
And if you're on hold, stay right there.
Patriotic group to build armed defensible neighborhood fortress.
Really?
Yeah. And the group, and I'm not going to give any of the names of the website.
Don't do it, yeah.
Intends to purchase 3,000 acres for a project in western Idaho. This is good.
Oh, boy.
So if you think, you know, you don't like liberal trash, like the one caller said, hey, go out to Idaho. The community will comprise of, who writes these things? The community will comprise of 3,500 to 7,000 families of patriotic Americans who, quote, voluntarily choose to live together in accordance with Thomas Jefferson's ideal of rightful liberty. Whoa.
Sounds a little kinky to me.
7,000 of those people out of here. 7,000 families. That's that's very intense.
Go.
I like that. And they're going to be bound by the following. Patriotism, pride in American exceptionalism, which...
What the hell does that mean?
It means where you have this exceptional...
We're better than you?
Yeah, place in world history. But these folks, they're proof of it, that the United States is exceptional. And then they go on and on
quote
and on.
Quote, unquote.
They're going to have a safe, well-prepared, patriotic community where children will be educated in school, not indoctrinated. They're not going to indoctrinate people. They're going to educate them, right?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
And
brainwashed.
More than 200 families have completed applications. Boy, this makes me sad. Yeah. Adios, MF.
See you later.
Yeah, bye.
You know?
And Marxist, socialist, liberals, and establishment Republicans will likely find that life in their community is incompatible with their existing ideology and preferred lifestyles.
What's that mean?
I don't know. Right. But here, right in Detroit, the insanity continues. There are these people that want to buy Belle Isle.
Yeah.
For $1 billion from the city of Detroit, which would eliminate the city of Detroit's financial problems. If you're not from the Detroit area, Belle Isle is this wonderful park that's in the middle
of
the
city. It's an island.
It's an island. In the middle of the Detroit River.
Other than the trash, it's a really cool place to be.
They
cleaned it up during the Grand Prix, but it's all trashy again.
Well, if...
no one's taking care of it.
If there was decent amount of money shared with the state and the city, from the state and the city and the government, the federal government, it'd be good.
Right.
So, $1 billion to buy this. The 982-acre island would be developed into a U.S. commonwealth or city-state of 35,000 people with its own laws, customs, and currency. City officials are likely to reject the plan, do you think?
You think?
Yeah.
You know, I had my first date with my boyfriend on Belle Isle.
I don't even want to... Never mind. Okay. Here's a scenario for the Commonwealth of Belle Isle that Lockwood, whoever that is, and others want to see. Private investors buy the island from a near-bankrupt Detroit for $1 billion. It would then secede from Michigan to become a semi-independent commonwealth like Puerto Rico or the Northern Mariana Islands. Under the plan, it would become an economic and social laboratory where government is limited in scope and taxation is far different from the current U.S. system. No personal or corporate income tax. How do they get their money to run? The city. Much of the tax base would be provided by a different property tax. It would take $300,000 to become a Belle Islander. And then, although 20% of citizenships would be open for striving immigrants, starving artists, and up-and-coming entrepreneurs.
Oh, my God. This whole thing's insane.
They are.
Really is. But, and I love Belle Isle.
So you would think these are just kooks, crazy people, right? Well, guess who is behind it? Something called the Mackinac Center, which is this far right wing.
Yeah, they have a big
think tank.
Yeah, it's like a think tank.
But how can they call it a think? They're not thinking.
I know.
They're just saying whatever.
Scheming.
So, and if you look it up, it looks like Mackinac, NAC, but it's Mackinac, as we know. Their senior economist, David Littman, is behind all this. So here is this prestigious conservative think tank that wants to buy Belle Isle for $1 billion. But also, retired Chrysler Vice President Al Sperlich and Clark Durant, co-founder of Detroit's Cornerstone Schools.
You know, the Belle Isle is for the people of this city. And I know people go down there and fish for their dinner down there, okay?
I got to tell you.
I wouldn't eat the fish out of there, but some people's... partially survive out of that river.
All right. Tom's back from Flint. We're letting Tom back because his call.
Oh.
We didn't even get to hear what he said. Tom, hi. You're on the air. We were talking about so-called silencers or suppressors, right? So
Silencers, suppressors. You made a comment at Body Hour. You said that you feel that they're mainly for criminality or criminal activity.
Like to hide
the
noise of murder.
Well, it's also
to get a silencer in the U.S. is actually rather difficult, expensive, and takes a while, and they're all registered and very easy to track. Also, body armor has saved a lot of lives, and a lot of security guards have come home to their families because they're still able to get body armor. To restrict the purchase of body armor to military or police would be I think it's tragedy.
Well, to be sure, you could limit it to people that have jobs like that. But if you think about these few mass murderers, but see, you know, the mass murders, as horrific as they are, and how they just scorch our consciousness, it's more. I'm almost more concerned about people that want that. I mean, that they sit around and thinking they need body armor, or that they need flash suppressors on their guns or silencers or stuff like that. I'm more concerned. I think that with more damage is done to the body politic, to our nation and our culture, by people that are obsessed with military weaponry and stuff like that. All right, I got to move on. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. All the way from Phoenix, it's had its problems with gun violence. It's Tom in Phoenix. Tom, welcome to the show.
Peter.
Thanks, you're on the air.
Click.
Oh, why didn't that happen?
I don't
I'm
know.
Sorry. There you go, Tom. You're on the air. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm calling Snowbird down here.
Okay.
And lucky
and it's
you.
Amazing. It's nice and cool, too, 50 degrees. The funny part about this gun thing is if they wanted to collect all the guns, it'd be very difficult because, you know, a lot of people think the Second Amendment right is the right to keep the government in check. That's the frame of mind a lot of people think like. It's not for home protection. It's to keep the government in check.
Right. Well, it doesn't. And by the way, Tom, I have to tell you, a lot of people don't. I would say that a teeny minority of people overall and a small minority of gun owners actually have guns because they think they're going to be able to take on the 82nd Airborne if for some reason or other that Obama declares a Muslim communist dictatorship.
Well, 50 years ago in the city of Detroit, you had the 82nd Airborne in there on Central High School shooting black people.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Sure.
And they justified that, didn't they?
Well, they did. Actually, the 82nd Airborne, and I think maybe another 101st as well, didn't do much of that at all. Really, who did it was this untrained, badly trained National Guard, Michigan National Guard, filled with, was almost 100% white coming in from outstate. And the 82nd, the 101st, suddenly they're, practicing warfare in 1967 when, their comrades are in Vietnam. So a professionally trained, well-executed plan of suppression of the disturbance, it happened. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Hank. Hank's in Ypsilanti. Hank, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that guy didn't legally own the guns that he used.
What guy?
The guy that shot all the 20 children. And
oh, yeah. No, he didn't write.
It was his mother's.
So, in other words, that's what I'm saying. There would have been no way that law, because his mother legally own those. I mean, you could make the argument that if the assault rifle ban that was put into effect in 1994 would have continued, maybe his mom wouldn't have had those. But geez, he had all those pistols too, right?
Well, no, he decided to do that by himself. He had to steal everything. I'm allowed to protect myself. I don't think you should punish me. That's what I'm saying. I don't think you should punish me.
How are you being punished? I mean, if you took down all of the speed signs around, and most of us would probably drive no more than 35 miles an hour in a residential area. But there'd be some jackasses that would be going 65 and 70 miles an hour. So most laws, and if there were no laws against murder, for instance, very, very, very few people of us would murder anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of us are decent human beings, whether we have guns or don't have guns. And so it's always all laws are to protect us from the wrongdoing of a tiny minority of our fellow citizens, right?
That's if you live in Nevada. They just don't have state troopers that are going to pull you over. You can go as fast as you want to. But I don't think you should ban me from my choices.
Okay.
Now, wait. Do you have an assault rifle?
I'm too scared to answer your questions about that. But
why? You think someone's going to come listen to this show
I
and come and take your gun? That they don't want your gun.
They don't even, there's nobody.
They don't want it.
You know what bothers
You're
me
in Michigan.
About all this? You know, they're the South, this goes back. This is, you know, this gun thing and the, this whole thing about the South and slavery and the Second Amendment all kind of intertwined.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Because in 1860, when Abraham Lincoln was elected president of the United States, and the South started this war by firing on Fort Sumter and all of that, Abraham Lincoln had no intention of abolishing slavery.
That's right.
And yet this was like this preemptive strike, essentially a preemptive counter-revolution to something that wasn't even occurring. So there's nothing. Two things. There's nothing on the agenda to confiscate anybody's weapons at all. They won't even be able to get through the National Congress any laws limiting the ability to buy assault rifles, which they did in 1994, ban its import and its sale in the United States for 10 years. There's not going to be any law against having high capacity magazines. They very well may have something that will demand that right now I think about 60% of the people that go through background checks maybe have everybody do it and coordinate and all that. But so there is
absolutely. Is it really true that only 60%?
I think so. I think I just saw that. But
wow.
you have a gun to protect yourself from a government that may take your gun.
If you promise me that, I will go along with you. I agree with you.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
This is
the David Koresh syndrome. Remember that guy in the 90s?
Waco,
when they wanted to have all these guns because they were afraid that the government was going to take away their guns.
And the government ended up
killing them all. Yeah.
Taking them all out.
So guns are like a police and military magnet. And right now the government is not going to do anything. The government was much more tyrannical, if you will, under George Bush. Actually, the government was very tyrannical under, for instance, during World War I, during President Wilson. It was very tyrannical in many ways because we were at war during the Civil War. But the Obama administration is doing nothing to confiscate guns, doing nothing, very, very little to pass any legislation.
I think they're just talking a lot.
You know why they're talking a lot? Because this will work with the base. And when the Republicans obstruct any bills to limit high-capacity magazines or assault rifles and shoot it down, if you will, that will be... That will be good news, electoral news for the Democrats. So there's not even going to be any laws that affect national laws that affect weapons at all.
Just says so much about this country and what people will believe.
Yeah. This is Mac in Clinton Township. By the way, there's open lines at 313-298-WRIF. I've never gotten to these marches. I'm going to do this right after you, Mac. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm very for the assault rifles being legal still, and I know that Obama doesn't want to take anything away, like you were saying, and stuff like that, but going along, I think it was two people ago, they were talking about the Second Amendment. If you look at the Second Amendment doesn't just say it's a right to own a gun. It actually says that it starts out saying it's the right to form a militia and to defend our country if something were to happen, if other countries were to come in. And I come from a military family. Both my mother and my father and both of my brothers served in the military. And anybody who's listening is also in the military. Thank you for your service. But as someone who comes from that kind of background, it's not a defense for me to defend against my country. It's for me to defend with my country.
Wait a minute. They have organized, they're not militias anymore, the National Guard, there aren't any militias anymore except these private militias. And they, you know, for one thing, we have an intact, permanent military establishment. In fact, we live in a military-industrial complex nation. It's a warfare state that's continually at war, continually preparing for war, that spends $1 trillion a year on military weapons. They don't need guys in a neighborhood with an assault rifle. And as I said, the militias that they talked about forming were demanded by the southern states because the militias Americans were the main, were seen as a bulwark against slavery revolts. The Second Amendment was essentially put in there by the demands of the slave owners. Because the militias, too, remember, you know, the only reason they got people initially to, I mean, I think, let me see, in 1860, the United States had 16,000 men in the army, 16,000. A year and a half later, there was, I don't know, a few hundred thousand because, you know, they had to call up, you know, states formed militias and sent them off to what have you, and then they had draft and all that. But we're talking about the Second Amendment that was essentially about, you know, suppressing slave revolt. So, you know, you don't need a, you know, nobody needs an assault rifle. People want one. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. You know, all right. I'm going to get one more call. I want to get Ella from Romulus on the air. Go ahead, Ella. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm trying real hard not to laugh here about the slavery revolt and the cause for the Second Amendment. Really? That's what it was about.
What, you don't accept that?
I know that's not true.
How do you know?
Well, because slavery wasn't the issue at the time that they wrote the Constitution.
It was central to it. It was there wouldn't have been an American Revolution if it hadn't been for the Southern states joining the
wanting
the,
to protect
slavery and wanting to protect slavery and to put into our Constitution their vile institution.
War. The Revolutionary War was against America, the new forming country, and England, trying to break away from the King of England.
I know. That was the northern industrialists and the northern mercantile, you know, the merchants. That's what they wanted to. But why did the southern states join the rebellion against England? Come on, there are crickets. I can hear crickets. They wanted to do it because they were fearful that Britain was going to abolish slavery, which it did, I think, somewhere in the 1830s. There had already been judicial decisions. Ah, she hung up.
I know.
Yeah, because you know nothing, lady. I mean, this is what I mean. Why do people that have opinions like that are so goddamn stupid?
Well, and then hang up.
Yeah. You know, in that article about us, we're saying we treat all our callers with respect. I mean,
until that moment.
There's a thing called critical thinking. You can't just make this stuff up. You didn't just see it on the internet or somebody told you. There's facts. Everybody's welcome to their opinion. You're not welcome to your own facts.
I mean, how many times have we had to say through the years, you can't argue with facts? Yeah. And if you want to call in and make your statement and hang up and run away, fine. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it.
We get it.
But one of the things that occurs to me, if you're willing to repeat nonsense in one thing,
shame on you.
Yeah, but then you're probably spouting nonsense about other stuff as well. That's what's difficult. All right.
And sadly enough, people are believing your nonsense.
Yeah. Here, this is opinion. Now, this is opinion. Jalene and I think
what you're about to say is opinion.
The majority, no, that people are whole. I'm about people holding opinion. Jalene and I believe in marriage equality because embedded in the Constitution, this is what the founding fathers set off. Right? Is that the whole thing about equal justice under the law and that associated concept. And so, you know, initially it was in the Constitution, it was white propertied males who could vote, and then there was this big fight, right, to abolish slavery, to let women vote, mm-hmm. You know, on and on like that. So now, equal protection under the law, one would think on the face of it, would allow people who want to marry someone of the same sex, how can they be excluded if you have that embedded in your Constitution, right?
Equal protection
under the law.
Except for you over there.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
And then you, no, yeah. Not you, but you can, and you can't, yeah.
Well, I don't know what to, you know, I actually don't know whether, a lot of countries don't have formal constitutions, but so I don't know whether France does or not, but several hundred thousand massed at the Eiffel Tower in Paris on Sunday to protest a plan by French President François Hollande to legalize gay marriage and adoption. Three columns of protesters waving pink and blue flags showing a father, mother, and two children converged from different meeting points in Paris. The organizers claimed 800,000 had protested, while police put the number at 340,000. usually the cops, my the cops usually
estimate low.
Low. So let's go the 800,000. Strongly backed by the Catholic Church hierarchy, and also
they mobilized a religious thing.
Church-going families, political conservatives. Gee, what a surprise! As well as some Muslims who are not down with gay marriage at all.
Right.
Evangelicals and even homosexuals opposed to gay marriage.
Yeah, which I'll there must never have been, get. Must so have like been, if you're gay and you
must
don't
have been nine of
just
them.
Don't, yeah, I know. If you're gay and you don't believe in gay marriage, just don't get married then.
Yeah, there's a group called Radical Fairies that have taken that that name that used to be derogatory, calling somebody a fairy.
Yeah,
that
right.
Was, and they don't want to be just like everybody else. But,
right.
But one of the things is
that's why they're the radical.
Yeah. But if you don't, and you're a partner with a person of another sex, you lose all these benefits. There's like 140 things that are not available to
the same sex. You mean?
I'm sorry, the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 140 things you lose. So that is clearly not equal protection under the law.
Hell no.
But one of the things that, so I don't know how in the world the Supreme Court cannot hold that things like the Defense of Marriage Act and all that. Why does marriage need defending? I mean, that's so nuts.
I know. And they're talking about straight marriage. They're trying to protect straight.
Well, opponents of gay marriage and adoption, including most faith leaders in France, have argued that the reform would create psychological and social problems for children. You know, aren't there a lot of heterosexual families of which kids wind up having some problems? Anyway.
Oh, my gosh. Are you
kidding
me? That
should trump the desire for equal rights for gay adults. Same-sex weddings are legal in 11 countries, including Belgium, Portugal, the Netherlands, Spain, Sweden, Norway, and South Africa, as well as 9 American states and the District of Columbia.
Boy, that number sure is climbing. And I think that's wonderful. I was actually surprised when I saw this on the news, and it was, you know, I've been to the Eiffel Tower. When I saw that area filled up with people, I thought, oh man, this is a pro-gay marriage thing. This is awesome. I love Europeans. They're so, you know, laid back and cool and sexually free and that whole, oh my gosh, it was the opposite.
When's the last time you ever heard me apologize to a caller? Maybe never.
No, you have before.
Yeah. All right, here. Ella is back. I want to apologize to her. She says she dropped the phone, so I was being
very... Ella, we're sorry.
Yeah, I heard all those nasty rumors about me.
I thought you hung up because you couldn't be deal with it. So I take it back, and I apologize.
No, I was getting a little upset because, number one, you wouldn't listen to me. Number two, I was carrying laundry up the basement steps, and when I started losing the phone, I was losing it.
Too much multitasking. They say multitasking really doesn't work.
Yeah, but go ahead. So what were we... I was saying that it was all about slavery.
Well, slavery wasn't abolished in England until 1833.
I'm
sitting here looking at my computer. The Revolutionary War was fought in
76.
That's when they signed the Declaration of Independence.
Right, and then that kind of PO'd England, and that started it all. Yeah.
So... Yeah. We're talking about a 100-year gap here.
Well, it's not a 100-year gap. For one thing that I said, there had been, look up the Somerset decision, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T, the Somerset decision. The southern states, you can, I mean, this is not like an opinion. This is what the southern states, said in their council. That they were fearful that because of things like the Somerset decision and the abolitionist movement in England, which was much stronger than here in the United States, that England would abolish slavery. Well, they did, like 60 years later, but it doesn't mean that wasn't the motivator.
Well, but that wasn't the main motivation for the Revolutionary War, nor was it the main motivation for them including the Second Amendment in the Constitution.
So,
well, that according to history books that you're reading.
I mean, I hate to say it, Ella, but you're just saying this. I mean, it's all right there. I mean, you can look up. Well, go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and there's this whole big article on there about the Second Amendment, why it was written, what the function of the militias were. It wasn't about individuals being able to
just read it and give it a chance.
Yeah, don't. keeping a musket in their house. It was about militias being raised in order in the South. And they didn't have much of a function. I mean, they did. They actually suppressed some revolts in right at the beginning of the United States. There were some tax revolts and what have you. And they raised militias in order to put down people that were objecting to tyrannical government taxation.
Which is really not shocking whatsoever.
Call us back next week. Read it. Hey, thank you.
Or you can always email the show at calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Right. And, yeah, so you can't just say, oh, well, you know, we fought the revolution for freedom. Yeah.
It's pretty large.
Yeah. I mean, it's complex. We're talking right. about politicians. We're talking about, the whole. Well, all right, let's let somebody else talk. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Brad in Jackson. Brad, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure, thanks for calling. What's up?
Well, I'd just like to express my own opinion. I'm not calling to argue, but to hopefully add some constructive content.
Sure.
I am a firearms instructor, and I do care about our Second Amendment rights, absolutely, 100%. I'll tell you that it's my thoughts and my opinion that the Revolutionary War fought against England was exactly for freedom. And I feel that the description of the militia is the people. It is the people for personal responsibility. We do have the right to defend ourselves. And I understand that, there are people in our country that feel that if we could take away firearms, it would be a much safer place. But I have to beg to differ a little bit. There is a prohibition on drugs, and drugs are absolutely readily available, and it creates a black market. Firearms demand a sense of personal responsibility. Would you guys agree to that?
Well, I would, and the fact that they're massively available probably limits the ability to make sure that occurs.
But I want to get back.
One of the things I think you have to be careful of, Brad, is that to say that it was fought for freedom. It was fought because the United States wanted to have an independent nation where they weren't controlled mostly by the economy, by the economic demands of England and of being a colony. But also they established this incredible document that for the first time in history, saw us as citizens with rights that we all shared equally, and we were no longer subjects. We agree on that, right?
I absolutely have to agree that the economy was part of it, and a big part of not being controlled by a foreign king. The people would like to decide for ourselves.
But the Second Amendment, saying is the Southern slave states joined only because of a fear of having slavery abolished in their states. I mean, that's it. I mean, they didn't care about, I mean, who do they care about freedom from? They were doing just fine. They exported most of their cotton to England, and it wasn't a problem. And there was a whole economy based around human beings as property, and they saw it threatened. So they said, whoa, well, let's get on board with this. And if they hadn't gotten on board, there probably wouldn't have not have been a successful rebellion. And but then they, as these slavers did all through American history and continue to do to today, is they blackmail the rest of us. So this document, and I keep using this word, that our foundation document, the Constitution, was sullied by the constitutional defense of slavery of human beings. 4 million slaves, 4 million human beings as property by 1860. And I'm sorry, the Second Amendment was demanded by the slave states in order that they could continue to have these militias that would suppress slave revolts.
Well, I'm gonna have to disagree a little bit, not necessarily to the point of why the Southern states may have helped or not, but actually the true meaning of the document itself in the signers and the framers. If we look at some of the Federalist Papers for some insight there on what the true meaning was, my personal feelings and opinion on it is that it comes down to the fact of true personal individual responsibility to ourselves and to our fellow countrymen. How we got there, I understand there is a bit of debate, and I don't really want to argue that point because I'm not as well educated on the actual Southern and the slavery.
Well, the only reason I am is just got to go look online or get a book. But
lots of books.
Here, though, let's you and I put an amendment to the Constitution that would be a substitute for the Second Amendment. And here's what with gun rights. And we'd say each individual in the United States has the right to keep and bear arms, and within, certain restrictions. I don't know how so people can't have bazookas or automatic weapons or what have you. But anyway, essentially we'd have an amendment that says, U.S. citizens have the right to keep and bear arms. Makes sense, right? Then there would be no ambiguity. But this one says a well-regulated militia. And so here we got some qualifiers here. We're not talking about individuals till the end of it, but in fact it never mentions the word individual. It says well regulated and it says militia. So they don't want people just running around with guns. They want a militia that is organized by rank and hierarchy and that it hence is well regulated and being necessary to the security of a free state. That meant two things. To the Northerners, because there wasn't these huge standing armies, and we weren't frittering away all our money on preparation for war, that these militias could be raised immediately, because there was fears always that the British would invade from Canada. That was about the only thing people were afraid of. And the Southern states, as I said, wanted militias in the Constitution to suppress slave revolts. And then it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms, which, and I mean, people argue about what does the people mean? Why don't they say the right of the individual to keep and bear arms? So, I don't know. All right. Unfortunately, I've got to go to a break. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. You sound like somebody that if everybody acted like you, there wouldn't be even this debate.
Sure.
So, yeah, keep teaching that individual responsibility, Brad. It's important. All right. Thank you very much. All right. We'll be right back. And
it's our final segment.
You can get in. Yeah. Where we are at in American health. And it ain't good.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to AdamandEve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, a free extra gift so sensual, we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type BABE31 for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code BABE31 at AdamandEve.com.
Your Honor, my client wishes to buy season tickets.
Objection, Your Honor. His wife won't allow it.
Okay, that may be a stretch, but if you've been thinking about divorce, you need to take control right now. Fred, Father's Rights for Equality in Divorce. Fred takes a preemptive strategy. They'll prevent her from taking the upper hand or your tickets.
Overruled. Counselor, your client may approach the stadium.
Fred's consultations are free. Call 248-356-7775, 356-7775.
Have you heard? The automotive industry is growing in Lapeer. Moldmasters Company, a recent GM Supplier of the Year, is a leading Tier 1 automotive supplier of injection molded interior trim and has immediate openings for skilled trade, technical, and administrative positions. If you're tired of fighting traffic, Lapeer may be closer than you think. Visit moldmasterscompany.com to see a list of our current opportunities or attend our job fair at Lapeer Michigan Works located at 550 Lake Drive in Lapeer on January 18th from 9 until 2. Openings include injection, process, and tooling cleaning technicians, paint and robot technicians, engineering, quality, and finance personnel. If you have automotive or plastics experience, check us out at moldmasterscompany.com. For information on our openings and job fair at the Lapeer Michigan Works on January 18th. Come join our team at Moldmasters Company. We're molding plastics to shape the future. To learn more about Moldmasters open positions and the job fair happening January 18th, visit moldmasterscompany.com. That's moldmasterscompany.com.
Moldmasters Company is an equal opportunity employer.
Mama has a habit. I smoke secondhand. Breathing in carcinogens. Time to take a stand. Toxins like an arsenic. A little cyanide. Too young to be inhaling stuff like formaldehyde. I'm breathing secondhand smoke.
Love is more addictive than nicotine. Love your child and yourself enough to call the Michigan Tobacco Quit Line at 800-784-8669. You'll get your own personal quit coach, and if you're pregnant, you'll get a free gift card for enrolling. Just call 800-784-8669. A message from the Michigan Department of Community Health.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, this is our last segment, so do join us. 1 a.m., it's going to be total anarchy, absolute total anarchy. I'm going to be interviewing a couple of guests. One wrote a book called Two Cheers for Anarchism, so he's not totally sold on it. And a second book called A Rule is to Break, A Child's Guide to Anarchy. It's actually a children's book, and the Tea Party has gone bonkers over it. It probably would have sold about 400 copies. Now it's sold about 400,000 or something like that. So, man. Yeah, you know, they used to have, years and years ago, like 60, 70 years ago, they'd have a phrase called Banned in Boston. So they had like this they had a censor board, and they would censor movies and then would advertise in other cities as Banned in Boston.
Okay.
All right. Actually, Touche is waiting on hold, and Touche, stay there, and because it sounds like something you want to comment on what I'm going to read about. Younger Americans die earlier and live in poorer health than their counterparts in other developed countries, with far higher rates of death from guns, car accidents, and drug addiction, according to a new analysis of health and longevity in the United States. Remember when you used to do that number one? Not here. The findings were stark. Deaths before age 50 accounted for about two-thirds of the difference in life expectancy between males in the United States and their counterparts in 16 other developed countries. The countries in the analysis included Canada, Japan, Australia, France, Germany, and Spain. And, this is the greatest country in the world. So why are we at the bottom?
In so many categories.
Yeah. The panel called the pattern of higher rates of disease and shorter lives, quote, the U.S. health disadvantage, and said it was responsible for dragging the country to the bottom in terms of life expectancy over the past 30 years. American men ranked last in life expectancy among the 17 countries in the study, and American women ranked second to last. Dr. Stephen Wolf, chairman of the Department of Family Medicine at Virginia Commonwealth University, who led the panel, said something is fundamentally going wrong.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, something. A lot of things.
This is not a product of a particular administration or political party. Something at the core is causing the U.S. to slip behind these other high-income countries, and it's getting worse. Car accidents, gun violence, and drug overdoses were major contributors to years of life lost by Americans before age 50. So if you make it to 50, you're doing okay. The rate of firearm homicides was 20 times higher in the United States than the other countries, according to the report, which cited a 2011 study of 23 countries. And though suicide rates were lower in the United States, firearm suicide rates were six times higher. 69% of all American homicides in 2007 involved firearms, compared with the average of 26 in other countries.
Well, that's quite the difference right there.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Panelists were surprised at how consistently Americans ended up at the bottom of the ratings. The United States had the second highest death rate from the most common form of heart disease, the and the second highest death rate from lung disease. a legacy of smoking rates in past decades. But, you know, man, they smoke like crazy in France.
Oh, I couldn't believe it when I was over there. Europe, in Europe in general, there's a lot of ciggies being smoked. Yeah.
Youth fared no better. The United States has the highest infant mortality rate among these countries. That's disgraceful. You know, these are infant mortality means your baby dies before age one.
Yeah.
Before it gets to be a year old. And so, like, I forgot, isn't it like there's 38 countries, including, you know, countries you wouldn't even think would be ahead of ours. And its young people have the highest rates of sexually transmitted diseases, teen pregnancies, and death from car crashes. Americans lose more years of life before age 50 to alcohol and drug abuse than people in any of the other countries. Americans also had the lowest probability overall of surviving to age 50. The report's second chapter details health indicators for youths where the United States ranks near or at the bottom. There are so many that the list takes up four pages. Chronic diseases, including heart disease, also played a role for people under 50. Dr. Wolf said, we expected to see some bad news and some good news, but the U.S. ranked near and at the bottom in almost every health indicator. That stunned us. And we're talking about
the greatest country in the world.
And we're talking about guns.
Right.
We're talking about guns. Part of it is because so many people are denied adequate health care. But also, there is something fundamentally wrong here. I mean, and the idea.
Broken.
That, yeah. There's something broken. And what we need, and it's not here, and I don't have it, is a vision of how to fix it. Because it can't, I mean, an individual could. Sometimes people do that. They just, everything seems to be going wrong. Suddenly somebody appears and poof, you know, it happens. Yeah.
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 You know, and we talk things like how many people are homeless in this country, how many kids go to bed hungry. My friend Latrice posted this cartoon on Facebook. And it was, you know, when we were kids and our parents said, you know, you need to finish up that food. There are starving kids in China or whatever like that. It's of a Chinese family. And it says, clean your plate, young man. There are starving children in America.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. All right, let's go back to our phone. Some comments from you. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Tashe in Detroit. Tashe, hi. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you guys?
We're good. Thanks for calling us.
I was just commenting about what you guys are talking about exactly.
Uh-huh.
I think the fundamental problem, I just got through reading a chapter from Walter Rodney about the European slave trade as a basic factor in African underdevelopment and how it set up basically our system that we have today, and that a lot of nations within our nation of indigenous people and African Americans as well as other minorities, LGBTQ and women, all oppressed nations within our bigger nation as Americans have been suffering under different legislators that have pretty much limited how much health care we could get as African Americans, as women, as anybody who's LGBTQ. There's always been this attack on what we deserved or what was felt by America that we deserved to get in form of health care.
Right.
Well, yeah, and that's the key to it. I mean, talk about a right. I guess I would be more interested in a right to health care than I would a right to possess a rifle. But, I mean, I suppose you could have both. I suppose you could have both because we already have the Second Amendment. But, you know, why is it? Just because where you land in the social heap, you either get the best medical care in the entire world, but if you're in the wrong place in the health system, you're going to wind up as a statistic that drags the United States to the bottom. So there's a difference, as I'm sure it's quite obvious, between the best health care, which the wealthy and the
or outside the norm, I think, is also what Tashe is trying to get at. Is with
outside of the classes system, there's the, you know, socioeconomic status factor of your income bracket and those meeting historically that high income bracket being largely of European or, you know, of white class. But there are lower class and middle class whites who are suffering under this same legislation now because of the division between the working class as a whole. To keep them separate from each other, to keep them at bars with each other, so this higher class who dominate the healthcare and the industry as a whole can pass these draconian laws and pretty much get away with it, you know, with the busting up of unions, so people have no way to demand healthcare together. if working class whites and working class blacks and LGBTQ and women can't come together to kind of fight those laws that, you know, bosses and companies say we can do this.
Well, you know, too, Touche, there is a lot of thought that that the ill health that that poorer people suffer, I mean, partly is, you know, that it's a characteristic of poor people to not eat the good diets that middle class and upper class people eat. I mean, that's a symptom of poverty. But also there's a great stress, a great psychological stress that people experience, both because of the pressures of what happens to one when they don't have enough money to live. And also a lot of it is the self concept, because people feel if they're poor, they've done something wrong, because we know that anybody can become anything in this society, which it really isn't true. There's really a caste system here that
just like India.
Yeah.
Here
that
in the
most
America.
People, you know, they wind up in the same class in which
they're born into.
I mean, sometimes, you know, they say, I was making, you know, $4 an hour back in the 1970s.
Now I'm a millionaire.
Like.
Well, good for
but
you.
But of course, they came from a middle class family.
Right.
All right, Touche, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate that greatly. You know, another medical thing, I didn't realize this. Ambien, the sleep medicine?
Yes. I know. This was kind of scary. I read this.
That, what was the thing? There is 60 million prescriptions dispensed in 2011 for sleep aids. I mean, this is something, remember we were talking last week about those energy drinks?
Yeah.
And people, the same thing. I mean, I wonder about this. I actually interviewed, I can't remember the writer's name, that wrote a book called Insomnia. And she said she always runs into people, the author did. She'd been had insomnia all her life, this particular writer.
Yeah.
And she said people see her and say, oh, you really? I could just lay down on a rock and go to sleep.
I bet that just angers her.
And she said it'd be like going up to a paraplegic and say, hey, look at me, I can hop on one leg.
Yeah, you know? Right, right. That's so true.
But it is, I mean, it's true that I just...
You're out like a light.
Yeah, I always say, let me see. It's
we're off the air at 1 a.m. Peter, you're asleep.
I'm asleep. By 1:30.
Yeah.
We live close to here.
We do. And
Jalene's up till 4 a.m.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like clockwork.
But one of the things that it says, sleeping pills have boomed in popularity with the increasingly frantic pace of modern American life. And we kind of take this for granted. We kind of take it for granted that there's millions of Americans with ill health that don't even have health insurance. We take it for granted that there's hundreds of millions of guns around here, that there's mass murderers, that we are living under global warming that's getting worse and worse and worse. Some people think maybe even to a tipping point.
Hottest year.
Yeah. And we haven't been able to formulate something that works in a manner that has occurred in other points in this country's history. Say, all of a sudden, there becomes an idea and a person and a movement that changes everything.
What are you getting at? You've lost me.
Have I? Okay. So,
and that's rare.
Things,
I usually can hang right with you, Peter.
Okay, well, I'm not making myself clear. Things are as they are right now. What is, you know, people always say that. Well, is this what we want right now? A country that has an increasingly frantic pace of life? Do we want to live in a country with mass murders? Do we want to live in a country that has so many poor people and so many homeless? Yeah, all of that. So how do we get out of, you know, we're just sort of chronicling the ills. So, but every once in a while to solve an American problem, someone or some people or some movement comes along and say, we have to change everything in terms, with a vision.
Are you saying that Ambien has solved problems?
No. It's a symptom of how deeply problematic
our life is. People can't sleep at night. Their brains can't shut down.
And I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm not criticizing anybody from, for taking it. It's not my intent.
Oh, no, not at all. I don't take any. I've never, when I sleep. Believe you me. Mama Julene gets a lot of sleep. It's just sometimes I get keyed up doing this political talk show. That's my issue.
But
I don't disparage anyone who takes them. The closest thing to Ambien that I've ever taken was like a Tylenol, the PM.
Yeah.
Tylenol PM. And I really didn't enjoy how I felt when I woke up.
Well, that's what they're talking about. They
say women are taking double the dose. This is a study. Double the dose. Like, what they're prescribed is double what they should be taking.
So, yeah, they're saying that women should be taking about half as much. Because if you think about that, with any pill,
it affects when you wake up.
Well, yeah,
driving to work.
Let's stay with that for a while. Yeah, that it can affect your driving. There's risk of drowsiness. But if you think about this, the same amount of medicine is prescribed for a 280-pound guy and a 101-pound woman.
Right.
So
yeah, that's something doesn't seem right about that.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. I was just telling my friend that tonight because she takes sleep aids once in a while. I said, you know, try cutting that in half. See how it does you.
Yeah, right. Well, you're right. You were just saying that we're off the charts heat record for 2012. You know, one thing you don't hear much anymore are the climate change, global warming deniers.
I still hear them. It's not the hot button issue right now.
Hot button, I like that.
Yeah. No pun intended. But people who tend to deny that tend to, there's kind of a whole list of things that, they kind of clump together with a lot of those deniers.
There's poor countries
across the political spectrum.
Obama is pouring billions of dollars into the new fossil fuel infrastructure, where this is John Talbert, who's a president, senior economist for the Center for Sustainable Economy. He says where scientists say we need to leave 60% to 80% of new fossil fuels in the ground if we are to avert a global meltdown. I mean, this is scary when people start talking about that. Something we cannot achieve as long as taxpayer money continues to be used to subsidize new coal mines, deep water wells, gas fields, pipelines, and export terminals. You know, they're trying to get the state of New York to stop fracking, where they pump fluids into these deep wells and force natural gas out. And right there is
toxic and poisonous.
Yeah, Yoko Ono and Sean Lennon are right up at the state capitol protesting. They actually, I mean, they got good hearts, but also they have a farm, right? There's like a family farm right near, so it affects
them.
Did
not know that.
Directly, yeah.
I did not know that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Daphne Wisham, who is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she's also the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network, says, although Obama has signaled that climate change will be a priority policy in his second term, it is not clear whether by that he means causing or slowing climate change. President Obama wants an all-of-the-above energy strategy, meaning greater energy efficiency in the expansion of oil, gas, and coal mining and nuclear power. This is just terrible on his part. Such a strategy dooms the U.S. and the world to higher temperatures, more nuclear accidents, and higher energy prices. Meanwhile, and this is pretty interesting, poor countries like Uruguay are on track to 90% renewable energy by 2015.
My gosh.
2 years.
We have so far to go in this country.
And rich countries like Germany and Denmark are on track, your favorite, Denmark. Are on track to 100% renewable energy by 2050, or if not sooner. The U.S. with vastly more sun and wind resources can and should do more to pull us from the brink of climate catastrophe. Now, I wonder whether, people could say, oh, that's Chicken Little. It's not going to happen. The other thing people are probably listening to or thinking when they're listening to this is that they're helpless. Because I can't.
About a lot of things.
Yeah. I can't, you can't, and a listener can't. Okay, man, that's terrible. What am I going to do tomorrow? Well, you got the liberal president who's invested in these planet-destroying
coal.
Fuels, coal and gas and nukes and oil and what have you.
He gets a big F for me on that, let me tell you. And I'm talking about a grade.
Oh, okay.
An E.
Yeah.
He fails.
He gets a big A from the energy companies, though.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't understand.
They love him.
I don't understand why the Koch brothers.
Relax. Make yourself comfortable, Peter.
I just put my foot up on the console.
I wish people could see us in here. webcam. I don't know.
Yeah. We have to start taking showers before we come to work. And all that.
Forget that. Yeah. No kidding.
Well, hey, thanks to John for being our phone screener.
For everything. And he's not just a phone screener.
I was going to say.
He gives up a lot of information.
He is an assistant producer.
He is. And, you know, when I started here almost 15 years ago with you, Peter, answering the phones, doing what John does, we didn't have the computers. I couldn't talk back and forth. I had to, write big, giant notes to you.
Yeah.
Joe, line one.
You're right.
We've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. And so thanks to him, there'll be a podcast of this entire show.
Tomorrow.
Well, actually, today.
Today
at 12 o'clock.
Ish.
And we were talking about the Constitution. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and look at some of this stuff about the gun debate. Remember, I said the NRA has won, so there's not any more question about that.
Yes.
But at least treat yourself to some critical thinking. Look at these articles about Hitler abolishing guns, which the first thing he was in office, which isn't true, about the
and we're not supporting Hitler.
Yeah, the relationship between the slave states and the Second Amendment, stuff like that. I mean, the challenge yourself. It's interesting because then because you know what, this isn't always the final word, because a lot of people will deny this that what is on my side is accurate. So this will do, it will create critical thinking, because you'll go and you'll read this and you go, my God, this destroyed everything I thought. And then you go, wait a minute, maybe I better go look at the NRA site or the gun owner's site or
ripple
something
effect.
Like that. Yeah. So you'll start, and then you have both sides of it. And then you have to make a decision. Which of these makes more sense? Which historically seems more legitimate? I mean, I know it's hard. I mean, we weren't there in 1776.
Right.
But
nor were we there when the Bible was written, and everyone seems to be really hyped up on that, aren't they? need another hour.
That's what set us off in a different direction. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Back next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Like lobster? Terry's Terrace has twin lobster tails for just $19.99. Get some lobster in your life. You deserve it. Terry's Terrace on Jefferson and Harrison Township. Twin lobster tails for $19.99. More delicious details at terrystime.com. Limited time offer.
Have you ever felt the frustration of trying to describe to someone a very complicated experience? Then after a time, simply throwing up a hand and saying, you just had to be there. Hi, I'm Joe Cordell, the law firm Cordell & Cordell. Divorce is a lot like that, especially for men. Words just won't provide the full picture, but neither will walking away, especially when your experiences might help a guy in a similar situation. If I did not believe that, I would not have chosen divorce law as my profession. My divorce was years ago, but I still feel a connection with every guy that hires Cordell & Cordell. At Cordell & Cordell, we work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives, and this includes protecting men's financial means to do so.
Call the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell, a partner men can count on. Offices in Troy, Novi, and Ann Arbor, 313-465-1999. That's 313-465-1999. Or visit online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com.
This is Realtor Jeff Glover. Right now is the best time in years to list your home for sale. The number of buyers in the market have increased dramatically, and they're out looking for homes right now. Plus, with available inventory near historic lows, your home will have less competition on the market. In other words, demand for homes is up while the supply of homes is very low, putting more money in your pocket. Homeowners who sell their homes with us get 97% of their asking price and sell their homes in an average of 23 days.
I'm Dave Moran. After our first realtor failed to sell our home in Clarkston, we hired Jeff Glover. He told me he would sell our home in 30 days, and he got it done in 2 weeks. We closed within 21 days, and my wife and I were very pleased. We'd recommend Jeff to anyone looking to sell a house in today's market.
Call Jeff Glover right now at 855-JEFF-SELLS. Whether your home is in Plymouth, Birmingham, Brighton, Shelby Township, or Ann Arbor, Jeff will get it sold. Call Jeff toll-free at 855-JEFF-SELLS or online at JeffGloverSells.com. With Realtor Jeff Glover, your home is here today and gone tomorrow.
Look who's back.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Oh, who's the star?
Everything that rocks.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I've heard the expression that everyone is born an anarchist and everything else is learned. In other words, we're what's called socialized. We learn how to interact with people, not to be selfish, not to hurt other people. In other words, we have, and this is the common thought, we live in a world based on rules. And the more strict the rules are enforced, goes the thinking, the more peaceful a society will be. And when we have people acting out, not following the rules, well, everything goes to hell, right? That is the common perception. And we have to begin, we're told, with children that are very young. Toilet training, you don't want to poop them all over the house and what have you. And, you know, you can't take that away from your little brother and all of the rest of it, right? Well, how about anarchy for kids? What would you think about that? Well, you say, well, they're already anarchists. I'm trying to calm these kids down. A book has come my way in the most unusual way. We'll get into that in a minute. It's actually a children's book. It's called A Rule is to Break. A Rule is to Break. Now, that goes against what we were just saying. It's a child's guide to anarchy, and it's by John and Jana. And they are a husband and wife team. They go under that name, and they write. They've written children's books before. They have twin boys of their own, and I'm real anxious to talk to them. We're reaching them at their home in North Adams, Massachusetts. And John and Jana, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter.
Hi, thank you.
I bet while I was giving that introduction, you were probably formulating about 19 answers, right? I mean, this does confound everyone's sense of socialization, that kids, they need rules. A rule is not to break. It's the opposite. Tell me your perspective on it before we get, oh, we should say, by the way, the book is pretty much a picture book, and it's for kids, right? I mean, adults can read it, but,
and grown-ups, yeah.
Yeah, and grown-ups, and, but it's got marvelous drawings, and mostly, so then I was going to ask, you answered my question, Jana, you're the illustrator, right?
I'm the illustrator, yep.
Yeah, that was the hard part, because when you read, I'm sorry, John, but when you read, the text, it's fairly, limited, but thoughtful and creative, I should say. All right, now I've covered my butt. Tell me, how is a rule to break? It's the opposite. We're supposed to follow the rules.
You want to take this, John?
Go ahead. Come on, guys. You got to bam, bam, bam. Go ahead. John.
Ask me that again, okay? I'm thinking.
The rules are made to be followed. We have to create rules for kids. We wind up with Lord of the Flies. That's the argument. Maybe we could have anarchism for adults where people interact democratically and make decisions by consensus and what have you, run our neighborhoods, our factories.
Right.
But anarchist kids? Wow.
Yeah, well, I guess you're kind of teaching kids cooperation in that setting. So maybe a rule, you know, no rules might be taking it to a whimsical extreme. Maybe rules might come out of it. But they'd be rules that collectively, would come out of a dialogue between adults and children and children and other children.
I think the book is less there are no rules and more a rule is to be questioned. For example, one of the pages is... when someone says work, you say why. the answer is not, the response from the child is not no, but the response is why. In other words, you know, explain to me why this is important and let me make my own decision.
So it's not rebellion. You know what I mean? I mean, so my dad would say to me, mow the lawn, and I didn't ask him why, or because he would not have gone for the questioning. But if I would have said why, what you're saying, then he would have said, look at it. We want to have a nice house presented in our neighborhood, so we have a nice neighborhood, and it's too long. I mean, that's,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, our message really is not to, you know, not blindly do the opposite of any rule, but rather before kids are sort of indoctrinated to follow blindly and then through adulthood follow blindly everything that you're told, to question it, think about it. And it really is aimed at kids. The age group we're looking at is, you know, when kids start public school and they are told to do any number of things that might not make any sort of logical sense, and it's okay. It's okay. It's okay okay for kids to question that, you know?
Well,
we had, you know, our kids would come home from school. They're now, we unschool our kids. They're home with us all day, and we have a very child-led learning experience here at home. And, you know, through the years they were in public school, you know, they were told all kinds of things that we didn't necessarily agree with, that they didn't necessarily agree with. And instead of saying, well, you have to do that because your teacher told you to, we would talk about it and say, oh, well, why do you think your teacher told you to do that? And, you know, maybe with this one, you know, problem we're having, let's talk to the teacher and see if maybe we can find another way around this. You know, instead of, you know, sitting in circle time, our kids, you know, might feel like they needed to stand up, you know,
mm-hmm.
or you know, not, we're not talking about, you know, complete and total rebellion, but, you know, can we talk to the teacher and say, you know, is it okay if you, you know, stand on the other side of the room, or, you know, I don't know, whatever. But there were, you know, lots of examples
sure.
of that.
Well,
I would say that children do have a lot of arbitrary rules tossed at them, you know, to make it convenient for the adult in the room. So a lot of the times it's the question why, the answer is because I said so. And I think because I said so really translates into because this makes it easier on me. And, you know, I think there are other ways to go about it, especially to you're just teaching a kid to be the same by saying that. And I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, you, one of the first pages in your book, A Rule is to Break a Child's Guide to Anarchy, says, don't look like everyone else. Be you. And then there's drawings by Jenna and that text by John. Actually, our guests are John Seven and Jenna Christie, and they write under John and Jenna. You can go to johnandjenna.com. It's published by Manic D Press. You can go to manicdpress.com. And there'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Now, since you've had experience raising children, I will relate this incident to you real quickly. I was on a bicycle trip in Europe a few years ago, and the guy I was riding with and I, we stayed at the home of two people who were self-identified anarchists, and they had a child to which they said they were going to do no supervision. So the kid would come in and turn the television up full blast, would start breaking stuff. I took it. He started to, like, smash something of mine. And I said, whoa, hey, kid, you know. And he just looked at me with rage. We went to a pub, and he demanded beer. So this kid needed some rules. I don't have any children, so I wouldn't, you know, I knew this wasn't the way to go.
Right,
but
right.
Tell us a little about your experience in raising your children. Are they out of control? How old are they now, by the way?
They're 17.
Okay, so are they out of control, law-breaking, rule-breaking?
They're very in control. I think they need to temper their parents a lot of times.
Okay.
Exactly. I mean, I think, no, our kids are amazingly polite and sweet guys, very, very thoughtful and very, very intelligent, and actually very conscious of societal rules, which we, you know, which we taught them as they were growing up. They needed to be courteous to people, and that's in the book. You know, listen to the tiniest voice is one of the pages, and that's kind of what we're getting at. You know, it's they were always taught to be aware of their place in society. In other words, you know, be aware that there are people around you, and you need to be conscious of that. So you're not allowed to just, you know, run rampant through stores and, you know, be a crazy person. You have to be conscious of others, but at the same time, you know, you're allowed to express yourself, and you're allowed to question what people tell you. And you can, and you respond, but you respond in a way that, you know, isn't hurtful to other people. What we're trying to do essentially is what our goal was with raising our own children, and what went into the book was we want to raise amazing citizens, you know, people who want to go out and help in the world and, you know, want to give back and are really able to listen to other people. And I think the only way you can really raise a good citizen is to have them question what they're told.
That poster or bumper sticker, question authority. Authority,
yeah, exactly.
Authority doesn't like that at all.
It's troublesome.
You know, you mentioned supermarkets. I was actually banned from supermarket. My mother was, because I would, you know, like tear, this is like when I was 3 years old, I would tear cans off the shelves and pull down displays. I mean, I had a horrible time in school. I graduated high school when I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
I just had the worst time. And I guess my advice usually to, and these were very rigid authoritarian, well, not the supermarket, but the schools, where
mm-hmm.
And you had no choice but to follow the rule. I would have said why to any teacher.
It
would have been a problem. And usually what I tell young people that are having problems, I said, look, the younger you are, the more vulnerable you are to authority.